Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is December 3, 2019. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about plaintiffs in Tether Bitcoin price manipulation case will not drop complaint. Ethereum developer Virgil Griffith to be released from jail pending trial. Bitcoin Lightning Network payments hit Bitfinex in industry first. Swiss Stock Exchange 6 lists physically backed Bitcoin ETP. Ethereum-based virtual museum tokenizes censored Bitcoin artwork. The SEC has a new chief crypto cop. Zcash Foundation funds app mixing private messaging and payments. Binance acquires Beijing-based blockchain data startup Dapp Review. Sanctions weren't discussed at North Korea crypto conference, attendee says. Now let's get started. Plaintiffs in Tether Bitcoin price manipulation case will not drop complaint. The plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit accusing the Tether USDT affiliated crypto exchange Bitfinex of Bitcoin BTC price manipulation have declined to amend their complaint. According to a court filing dated December 2, the plaintiffs declined to make amendments to their complaint as a study conducted by John Griffin and Amin Shams still concludes that USDT was being used to manipulate Bitcoin prices. Moreover, they state that the findings connect the manipulation to a single entity. Last year, Griffin and Shams of the University of Texas published a paper alleging that Tether partially caused Bitcoin's historic high of $20,000 in 2017. The paper stated, "Less than 1% of hours with such heavy Tether transactions are associated with 50% of the meteoric rise in Bitcoin and 64% of other top cryptocurrencies." The study claimed that one large player on Bitfinex uses USDT to purchase large amounts of Bitcoin when prices are falling and following the printing of USDT. The plaintiffs further added that Bitfinex executives either knew of the scheme or were aiding it. Bitfinex's response to the single entity allegations. In November, Bitfinex issued a response to the paper, denying its findings and even accusing the authors of unethical motivations. The exchange said, to obtain publication, Griffin and Shams have released a weakened yet equally flawed version of their prior article. The revised paper is a watered-down and embarrassing walk back of its predecessor. Blockchain education platform Longhash released research that it claims debunks the single whale theory of the 2017 price surge. According to Longhash, the metric measures how much Bitcoin could be bought with the entire Tether supply at any given time, pointing out that the higher the ratio, the more likely it is for Tether to potentially manipulate the markets. The researchers said, "This suggests that even if Tether were indeed manipulating the market, its ability to do so actually is strongest when the Bitcoin price falls. This contradicts the claim that Tether issuance drove the 2017 bull market. The supply of Tether actually failed to keep up during the height of the bull market." Ethereum developer Virgil Griffith to be released from jail pending trial. A judge ruled that the U.S. Department of Justice has enough evidence to move a case against Ethereum developer Virgil Griffith to trial. Griffith, who was arrested in Los Angeles on Thanksgiving Day on charges of conspiracy to assist the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, in learning more about cryptocurrency for its own benefit, had a preliminary court hearing Monday to determine whether the DOJ had sufficient evidence to establish probable cause. The U.S. Attorney's Office of the Southern District of New York said Friday that he had been charged with violating the International Emergency Economic Powers Act (IEEPA) by traveling to the Democratic People's Republic of Korea (DPRK) or North Korea in order to deliver a presentation and technical advice on using cryptocurrency and blockchain technology to evade sanctions. According to Friday's complaint, Griffith asked for and was denied permission to travel to North Korea in order to give the presentation, titled Blockchain and Peace. Moreover, the complaint said, Griffith subsequently began formulating plans to facilitate the exchange of cryptocurrency won between the DPRK and South Korea, despite knowing that this would violate U.S. sanctions against the DPRK. Following the hearing Monday afternoon, Brian Klein of Baker Marquardt, who is representing Griffith, said in a statement that the developer will be released from jail after bond is posted. He added, "We are very pleased that today the judge found that Virgil should be released from jail pending trial. We dispute the untested allegations in the criminal complaint. Virgil looks forward to his day in court, when the full story can come out." Klein has represented a number of high-profile individuals in the cryptocurrency and cybersecurity worlds, including Bitcoin entrepreneur Charlie Shrem and security researcher Marcus Hutchins. Klein negotiated a settlement against Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who sued Shrem in November 2018 alleging he owed them $26 million in Bitcoin. Hutchins, who was accused of creating the Kronos malware by U.S. authorities, pleaded guilty and was sentenced to a year of supervised release, with the judge in the case recommending he apply for a pardon. Correction, Dec. 2.102 Coordinated Universal Time. After publication of this article, the lawyer representing Griffith added that his client will be held until bond is posted. This usually takes a few weeks, Klein wrote. The headline has been updated. Bitcoin Lightning Network payments hit Bitfinex in industry first. Cryptocurrency exchange Bitfinex has revealed the first of two major upgrades it says will completely change user payments and spending habits. In a tweet on December 2, the platform's CTO, Paolo Arduino, confirmed that as of Tuesday, it would support Bitcoin, BTC, transactions on the Lightning Network, LANE. The move is a first for a major cryptocurrency exchange, Bitfinex announcing it via its updates mailing list. Exchange eyes free and instant BTC payments. Users will benefit from instant transactions and will pay almost zero fees to send funds via Lightning. The reveal appears to correspond to the first of two mystery integrations Bitfinex announced on its website last month. Once this feature is unlocked, crypto transactions will never be the same again, its description reads. The second improvement remains unknown but appears to focus on spending, rather than exchanging cryptocurrency. When this feature is live, the way you spend crypto will change forever, Bitfinex promises. Lightning inches into mainstream. Lightning has been functional on the Bitcoin mainnet since the start of 2018. Designed to improve Bitcoin network capacity, the tool has received high-profile backing from the likes of Twitter CEO, Jack Dorsey, and others. At the same time, its use remains reserved for the technically minded, as its nascent state makes it unsuitable for novice crypto investors. Commenting on Bitfinex's decision, Arduino was clear about his preferences for Bitcoin scaling. LANE and LANE assets are not only the best P2P micropayment solution, but an impressive settlement layer for B2B. Lightning company Bitrefill confirmed it would assist Bitfinex with deposits and withdrawals. Swiss Stock Exchange 6 lists physically backed Bitcoin ETP. Nasdaq-listed WisdomTree has launched a physically backed Bitcoin exchange-traded product ETP to be listed on Switzerland's principal stock exchange, SIX Swiss Exchange. In a news release published on December 3, the asset manager revealed that online Swiss bank Swissquote will serve as a custody partner for the product, which is being listed at a total expense ratio of 0.95% under the WBTC ticker. Bitcoin not a passing trend. Targeted at professional and institutional investors, the ETP provides exposure to Bitcoin without the need to store private keys or have a thorough grasp of blockchain financial infrastructure. The ETP is physically backed by Bitcoin, meaning that investors in the product have an entitlement to a determined amount of Bitcoin, yet custody is entrusted to an institutional third party. As the news release outlines, the ETP tracks the spot price of Bitcoin, with WisdomTree purchasing Bitcoin and creating smaller-sized shares, which can then be traded and redeemed on the SIX exchange. In a statement, Alexis Marinoff, head of Europe for WisdomTree, said the company has seen enough to believe that digital assets, like Bitcoin, are not a passing trend and can play a role in portfolios. WisdomTree claims that bringing cryptocurrencies into the ETP structure could provide centralization of liquidity for the asset class, supporting a range of crypto ETPs. As previously reported, SIX listed a pioneering multi-crypto-based exchange-traded product back in November 2018, which tracks five major digital assets. The exchange has since continued to support a range of crypto financial vehicles, including a new Bitcoin and Ether (ETH) ETP from fintech firm Amen this fall. SIX has meanwhile been testing blockchain integration for its forthcoming parallel digital asset trading platform, SDX, which is expected to launch in Q4 2020. Ethereum-based virtual museum tokenizes censored Bitcoin artwork. Bitcoin artist BNYT C has created an Ethereum-based virtual museum CryptoVoxels that ensures censored artworks are immutably preserved for an online audience. In its collection as of August 25 has been a Bitcoin mural by French street artist Pascal Pboy Boyart, which was painted over by French authorities earlier this year. Revolutionary stirrings. CryptoVoxels site tells the story of the subversive mural, a modern-day reworking of Jean Delacroix's classic revolutionary painting La Liberté guidant le peuple, Liberty guiding the people. The mural, created in honor of the 10th anniversary of Bitcoin's Genesis block, had recast the rebels who rose up against King Charles X in 1830 as contemporary Gilets Jaunes, yellow vest protesters. Conceived as a street art treasure hunt, it contained a puzzle with a 0.284 BTC bounty, which could be solved entirely only by finding and being physically in front of the mural. It was painted over 1 month after its creation. The mural has now been tokenized as a digital collectible split into 100 ETH-based non-fungible tokens, which can be bought and sold via peer-to-peer digital collectibles marketplace OpenSea. Users wishing to display their fragment of the mural need to buy ETH-based land parcels on CryptoVoxels. Just as with artwork, these land parcels can also be bought and traded via OpenSea. Art and the blockchain. In 2018, Cointelegraph reported on the world's purportedly first cryptocurrency art auction, in which fractional ownership of Andy Warhol's 14 small electric chairs was sold via the Maecenas blockchain platform. Similarly to Boyart, artist Andy Botch has produced puzzle-like crypto artworks containing abstract codes, which provide hints to retrieving the private keys to wallets containing thousands of dollars worth of cryptocurrencies. In the spring of this year, blockchain-based art registry startup Artori raised over $7 million in Series A funding round from an early Spotify investor, among others. The SEC has a new chief crypto cop. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, has appointed a new head of its cyber division, taking over from Robert A. Cohen, who left the post for a position in the private sector in August. Christina Littman will be the agency's new chief of the Division of Enforcement's cyber unit, according to an SEC announcement on Monday. Joining the SEC as a staff attorney in 2010, Littman rose in the ranks to become a senior advisor to SEC Chairman Jay Clayton in the summer of 2017. In that role, she has advised Clayton on regulatory and policy relating to cryptocurrencies and digital assets, as well as international affairs, trading and markets, the SEC said. Christie's innovative thinking and extensive experience within the commission have made her an invaluable advisor and, most importantly, a tireless defender of America's investors, said Clayton. She will be an excellent leader for the cyber unit as it continues its work in this critical and continually evolving area. The cyber unit was founded in 2017 as a way to tackle cybersecurity issues and protect investors against wayward members of the developing blockchain and crypto industry. Under Robert Cohen, the unit pursued actions against initial coin offerings the agency considered fraudulent. Littman will inherit notable ongoing crypto lawsuits, including one against Kick Interactive for allegedly engaging in an unregistered $100 million securities offering. Telegram is also fighting a similar SEC-brought case over its Gram token. Cohen left the SEC for a partner position at corporate law firm Davis Polk & Wardwell LLP, a company that has represented crypto firms including Coinbase, as well as major financial institutions. With a JD and an MBA from the School of Law at Rutgers University, Littman had practiced at a law firm specializing in corporate and securities litigation prior to joining the SEC. Littman's varied experience as an investigator, a trial lawyer, and a senior advisor have prepared her well to lead the cyber unit, said Stephen Paikin, co-director of the Division of Enforcement. Zcash Foundation funds app mixing private messaging and payments. The Canadian nonprofit Open Privacy is working on CWTCH, a Zcash-fueled messaging app with more decentralization than Telegram or Signal. CWTCH is focused on building a decentralized infrastructure, said Open Privacy founder Sarah Jamie Lewis. It can't be reliant on Visa or Venmo unless we can find a way to remove that metadata. The project is still in an early stage of messaging between roughly a dozen node and server operators. Now, thanks to a donation from the Zcash Foundation's donation of roughly $40,000, the nonprofit will hire a designer and continue research on the payment aspects of the system. Think of it like a prepaid card, Lewis said. You would top off at some point using Zcash or any other payment methods. Lewis said CWTCH, a Welsh word for hug pronounced something like cutch, was inspired by market research with sex workers and queer communities that experienced censorship and malicious surveillance. As such, Open Privacy is looking into multiple options, including Bitcoin, diverse on-ramps and liquidity. There are ways to minimize some of those issues and get around them, she said in reference to Bitcoin's public ledger and lack of capacity for direct encrypted messages. UX hurdles. It is unclear at this stage how Open Privacy will overcome the user experience challenges, however. Even the Zcash option will rely on shielded transactions, which requires a node that very few people know how to operate. Part of this grant will go toward hiring a designer and conducting more research, Lewis said. Server-side support is only half the battle, and the most critical aspect of this whole endeavor will be getting people who use CWTCH to a position where they can easily use Zcash and possibly other cryptocurrencies with similar properties to pay for anonymous services, or even accept it themselves, Open Privacy said in a press statement. So far, some of the greatest needs appear to be personal ads, such as those Craigslist or Backpage used to offer, and dating app-like features. It would also need to be discreet, since Lewis said some people are subjected to systematic or personal violence if they are found by authorities to have apps like Grindr on their phones. To address this, the app works almost like Bitcoin in that everyone downloads a ledger of all the messages, some of which are public. The difference is, private keys and user identifiers can be used to unlock certain conversations, including private group chats and direct messages. George Tankersley, the Zcash Foundation's Director of Engineering, said he hopes to incorporate insights and feedback from CWTCH into the Zebra Zcash implementation. One of our goals is to do more work with external users and even competitors of Zcash and to allow that to drive our priorities going into 2020, Tankersley said. Open Privacy, founded in 2018, is funded primarily through user donations of Bitcoin, Zcash and Monero. Binance acquires Beijing-based blockchain data startup DappReview. Binance has acquired DappReview, an evaluation platform that offers data-driven research and advertising services to blockchain-based decentralized applications, dApps. The acquisition of Beijing-based DappReview will help the world's leading exchange by volume to further develop its existing dApps and create new blockchain use cases, said Viktor Radchenko, founder at Binance's Trust Wallet. In the near future, Trust Wallet will integrate DappReview APIs to provide easy access to explore new dApps and crypto games, as well as more insight into DeFi, decentralized finance, services, analytics and usage, Radchenko said in an interview. In return, Binance will offer support for DappReview in non-technical fields, including marketing and business development while the platform maintains its independence in technical development and operations, according to a statement from Binance. By working with Binance X, the company's developer network, and Launchpad, DappReview will bring in more talented dApp developers and assist promising dApp projects on fundraising, Vincent Niu, founder of DappReview, said of the deal. A lot more exciting synergies with Trust Wallet, Binance Research, etc. DappReview will partner with the public chains and protocols in the dApp space through Binance's ecosystem, Niu said. The dApp platform will release a new suite of products in the first quarter of 2020, according to the statement. Niu declined to reveal what the new products will be, but said it is an analytical tool. The acquisition also means Binance will now have a wholly owned subsidiary based in Beijing. In recent weeks, the exchange vociferously denied reports that it has closed an office in Shanghai and has tamped down rumors that a Beijing office was forthcoming. Binance declined to disclose the financial terms of the deal or the actual entity that made the acquisition. Building the bridge. According to an announcement on June 10 from Neo Global Capital, dApp Review raised a Series A round worth millions of yuan from the firm. Founded in March 2018 by Niu, a former BlackRock risk and quant analyst, the platform provides data-based research services on more than 3,900 dApps, such as wallets and exchanges, on 13 public blockchains, including EOS, Ethereum and Tron. dApp Review is building the bridge between protocols with developers and users, Niu said. dApp Review also has its own influencer media account on WeChat, the Chinese equivalent of Facebook, where it provides reports in Chinese on the latest dApps. dApp Review has been a staple for the blockchain gaming space since the beginning, Benny Jiang, founding member of CryptoKitties creator Dapper Labs, said in the statement. They have been instrumental in connecting the Chinese community with the Western community. With its data analytics and media account, the platform also offers marketing and advertising services to companies in the space, according to its website. Next step, dApp Review will expand its footprint on the global market, on which Binance will provide all needed support in terms of marketing and branding, Niu said. Sanctions weren't discussed at North Korea crypto conference, attendee says. An Italian citizen who attended the North Korean cryptocurrency conference in April says the U.S. government's charges against his friend and Ethereum developer Virgil Griffith are overblown. Griffith has been charged under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act for allegedly providing technological training that would make it easier for the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, to evade U.S. economic sanctions. He is in federal custody for providing highly technical information to North Korea, as U.S. Attorney Jeffrey S. Berman put it in last week's announcement. But Fabio Pietrasanti says law enforcement has an exaggerated conception of what took place at the Pyongyang Blockchain and Cryptocurrency Conference. Very little of substance transpired, he told CoinDesk. The sanctions were not a topic at all, said Pietrasanti, who attended the event on the same trip as Griffith, the Ethereum Foundation staffer arrested by the FBI on Thanksgiving Day. According to Pietrasanti, the conference took up 2 days of a larger trip that allowed a small group of non-North Koreans to have a look at the so-called Hermit Kingdom. The visit's full itinerary can be viewed on the state website. I always wanted to go there, in North Korea, Pietrasanti told CoinDesk. As a sanctioned country, the place inspires a lot of curiosity for anti-censorship activists like him. As you always want to fight against control, it's very interesting, he said. Pietrasanti said he's known Griffith for nearly a decade, first meeting as participants in the Tor community developing the open-source anonymized web browser that makes surveillance all but impossible for anyone but state-level actors. Griffith's attorney, Brian Klein of Baker Marquardt, issued a statement after the accused's first court appearance Monday. We are very pleased that today the judge found that Virgil should be released from jail pending trial. We dispute the untested allegations in the criminal complaint, Klein told CoinDesk. Virgil looks forward to his day in court, when the full story can come out. Don't talk politics. To be sure, Pietrasanti has an agenda. He made it clear that his goal in speaking was to advocate for Griffith's safe release. He asserted multiple times that the sanctions were not discussed at the DPRK conference. To speak of them in such a setting would have been ill-advised, Pietrasanti said. The first rule of visiting a regime like North Korea's, he told us, was, don't talk about any political topic. He knew this already but he said it was something the trip's organizers also emphasized. More broadly, Pietrasanti said that the conference provided a reason for some outsiders to get access to North Korea and see part of the country. From a certain perspective, it's sort of like a tourist trip with some educational value, he said. They were in North Korea for a week, Pietrasanti said, with several days of seeing different parts of the country under a strict schedule, continuously with government minders. There were then 2 days of the conference. Pietrasanti said it cost him approximately $4,400 to go. He estimated that the conference involved something like 40 to 60 North Koreans and fewer than 10 outsiders, but Pietrasanti emphasized that the event functioned nothing like a Western conference would. We didn't have any opportunity to speak individually with a single North Korean person at the entire conference, he said. Further, the presentations were slow and halting, because the provided translators were not able to translate in real time. So, a presenter would speak, the translator would translate, and the speaker would continue unless someone didn't understand. Then they would start over. Sleepy audience. While the initial agenda was completely planned out by the organizers and approved by the government, Pietrasanti said that they didn't actually have enough material approved to cover 2 days of a conference. The conference program was a bit improvised, he said. For example, he hadn't originally been slated to speak, but he ended up giving a talk about the tokenization of property, even though he doesn't have expertise in that, because the organizers needed to fill the time. He didn't have a clear sense of the identities of the North Koreans in the room, but based on some of their questions, he guessed that maybe 4 or 5 were sophisticated about technology. His impression was that most of the people there had simply been told to go. I saw people sleeping during the conference, Pietrasanti said. The conference is scheduled to take place again in 2020, according to its website. Pietrasanti said he doesn't really remember much about Griffith's presentation. He characterized the conference as a boring 2 days. The information covered was basic Google-level knowledge, he said. It's just crazy to think there was some sophisticated technology transfer, Pietrasanti said. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again PayCademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.